Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, Thunder fans? It's your boy Dylan coming to you with an ad from our sponsor. We are part of the Believe Podcast Network, and so we are coming at you with our sponsor, BetOnline.ag. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the NBA and NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. And don't forget, this weekend, as the Run to the Roses is on at the Kentucky Derby. You know, my neck of the woods in Kentucky. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code BLEAV. That is all capital letters, BLEAV, or believe, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Enjoy the pod. And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Top of Thunder podcast, part of the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dylan Hunsinger at Thunder Chats, and we are in post-draft lottery draft coverage now. Like, it's official. The Thunder had the number two pick. We didn't quite win the lottery. Somebody else had the pleasure of that, but we're going to get into that here in a second, because joining us today is a man who is doubly happy for polar opposite reasons. His Western Conference team, the Dallas Mavericks, are in the Western Conference Finals, spearheaded by Luka Doncic. And his Eastern Conference team, the Orlando Magic, have won the lottery again, giving them the first pick in this year's draft. He is a man of many ventures, including, but not limited to, the Locked On Podcast Network, as well as starting his own website, MavsDraft.com. He was hooping before he came here. He's sick of hearing check compared to every skinny person to ever play in the league. And he is the first guest on our post-draft lottery coverage. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the man making Mavs draft magnificent, Richard Stayman.
Dude, I might need you to be my official hype man. That is the best introduction I think I've ever had. I appreciate the kind words.
Hey, absolutely, man. Yeah, it's something I enjoy doing for our guests, like getting them guessed up and making them feel comfortable and welcome. So hopefully it did the job, man. But like I said, man, we're excited to have you. I've been following you for a while on Twitter. I've listened to you on Ryland's pod. I'm Locked On Thunder a lot of times, so I'm excited to get the chance to talk to you myself.
Hey, likewise. And I know I've seen your account a lot. I think I followed you for a bit. I can't remember, but definitely excited to be on here and talk some Thunder. They're recently growing into like one of my biggest non-Mavs fan bases, so it's really nice to be here.
There we go. I like to hear that. Well, hey, man, before we get into the draft, because we've got a lot to talk about in the draft, you know, whenever we have a new guest on, we like to kind of ask a few background questions just to, you know, give the listener an idea of who we're talking to. So starting out, man, I just got to ask you, you know, what first got you into talent evaluating for the draft?
Yeah, pretty relevant to this year, actually. When the Magic last won the lottery in 2004, I was really excited because the Mavs were good and the Magic were rebuilding. They had just moved on from T-Mac and Grant Hill, all those guys, and they got a, or not Grant Hill, I think he was actually still there, but regardless, they had the number one pick, and I was really excited between the battle of Emeka Okafor and Dwight Howard to see who would be the number one pick. And that from there, it was kind of like, it felt like predicting the future. And pretty much every year after I watched the draft, I did my little research as much as I could. I was 10 at the time. You know, being young, you can only do so much.
Yeah.
And then 2011, I loved Kawhi Leonard. That was like my guy. I hated Jimmy Butler, but I loved Kawhi Leonard. So I missed and I hit. I thought he should have been going to Cleveland at number four. And then 2017, the way I started Mavs draft was I went and I was talking about Donovan Mitchell so much. I was like, I'm just going to create an account so I don't bother everybody else who follows me for anything else I do. And I went to create a Mavs draft. I'm like, yeah, let's see what happens. And Donovan Mitchell turned out to be really good. So that's how I got here.
There you go, man. Your claim to fame is Donovan Mitchell. I like it. I like it. Yeah, that's kind of the same thing with me. You know, I started Thunder Chats because I didn't want to clog up my Twitter feed with a bunch of Thunder tweets, which I had already been doing for years. But, you know, once I was getting into podcasting and stuff, I knew it was going to be even worse. So, I'm right there with you, man. But, hey, I want to ask you, you know, you said you was really high on Kawhi. How old was you? So you was 10 when you was 2004. So that means you was 17 at that point.
Yeah. I was entering my senior year of high school that year. And I was like, dang, this guy is huge. Like, he has all the physical tools. Like, if there's a guy to bank on, it's him this draft. And lo and behold, it was honestly a shot in the dark, really lucky more than actual like deep dive evaluation. But just from like an outsider's perspective, I thought he was really good.
There you go. I like it, man. I mean, hey, we all have our hits and misses. I was really high on Maxi. You know, ironically, I compared him to Donovan Mitchell. But I was also not really low. I just wasn't super bought in with Zion. And, like, he made me look really stupid last year. Jury's out on what he's going to end up looking like. But, you know, it hits and misses all around. So I did mention you're part of the Locked On Network. Is that podcast network or network? I know you guys do some written stuff as well.
Yeah, it's a podcast.
Okay. Well, Locked On Podcast Network, let me say that for the record. How'd you get to become a part of that?
I was really lucky. So the person who is like in charge of the basketball side is the Mavs guy. He's had me on his show so many times throughout the years to talk draft. And when it came time to fill in the draft show, I was like one of the first in line because he had experience with me. So that was really lucky, but also like he's followed me on Twitter forever. And so he's seen my draft stuff and knew, and like, I know my stuff, not to like, you know, toot my own horn, but you know, so I had experience with him. That was actually the really lucky part. I really didn't even have a podcast before. I had a little one I did, but it wasn't very big. So I was very lucky.
I got you. That's awesome, man. I mean, you know, talking about it with like the Mavs and the draft, like obviously you guys hit the lottery, you know, a couple of years ago, taking Luka Doncic. Was that one of the guys that you had kind of highlighted in that year's class, or like, was you looking elsewhere or what?
Well, I really wanted DeAndre Ayton. I thought he was so special. And then I didn't realize the mindset was just not special. Mm-hmm. And that was a big miss, but I had Luka. I mean, I was very, very happy with him. I was excited to see him on the Mavs. I was not one of the people that was against him. I thought it wasn't even a knock on him. I really thought, and I missed in this part. I thought Ayton was going to be like just such a dominant center. I thought he was going to be like the newest, closest thing. Like, I thought he was going to be Embiid. And that was before Embiid was Embiid, but and then I also thought Bagley. I was like, there's no way he doesn't translate. And then like, he didn't. It wasn't like, I had them all, for the most part, I had Ayton above, and then I had Luka and Bagley equal, which like at the time wasn't unpopular, but now it makes me look really dumb.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a lot of people obviously high on Bagley as well. I mean, he went number two in the draft, and who knows, man, if he didn't go to the Kings, he might have ended up, you know, not a superstar, but he could have ended up a lot better situation. It looked like he was in a better situation towards the end of the year when he got traded to the Pistons. But hey, man, you know, like I said, you know, Thunder Pod, Thunder Talk, before we get into the draft, I want to ask you, you know, we're obviously very proud of the guy going by Shea Gilgeous Alexander, as I wear the Shea guy NBA paint hoodie. What was your evaluation on Shea going into the 2018 draft, and how is he now different from, I guess, your expectations at that point?
Yeah, I really thought the lack of pull-up shooting out of Kentucky would kill him, and I missed on that. It wasn't, not only was it not a killer, he's actually not bad at pulling up. It's a little bit unconventional in how he does it, but I really underestimated him. I think I fell for the Kentucky trap, but I learned the lessons, the quickness, the sliveriness. Like, it was definitely a valuable scouting lesson and missing on him.
Yeah. All right. Full disclosure, I mean, you'll probably learn as we get into the draft. I'm a huge Kentucky fan. So I wasn't super high on Shea. I was actually real low on him going into the year, but I had been like following his scouting. He was playing behind Quade Green at the beginning of the year, and he didn't give much more than, ironically enough, defense and playmaking. And, you know, then his calling card kind of became scoring. So it was fun to kind of watch him blossom. But yeah, that's kind of been like the consensus amongst the draft guys that we brought on here, is everybody's been, that was the one thing, like the pull-up shot and really just his shot and like three-point shot in general. But yeah, we really enjoy Shea. And you saying unconventional, that's like the perfect word to describe everything about Shea's game. I think he is a really unique game. Last year's draft, we drafted Josh Giddey, Trey Mann, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and Aaron Wiggins. Correct me if I'm wrong, you had Jeremiah Robinson Earl in your top 14, is that right?
Yep, I believe it was number 12.
Man, and do you think that he's kind of met those expectations? Do you think there's more to grow into?
Well, I mean, it's I don't know, it's crazy because the draft is so good. I don't even know if he's number 12, but like, mm-hmm. what it was, number 15. And he also missed a lot of time, unfortunately. Yeah. But I do think, you know, he's already a veteran. Like, to me, that's to me, that's somebody who's going to be a top 12 player from their draft. I'm very confident in it. I loved their draft as a whole.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that too, because, you know, obviously we had Gideon, man. Like, I feel like most Thunder fans feel like Presti kind of batted, I mean, for lack of a better term, he batted 1,000 like in the draft. Like, we feel like he really like struck gold. And I think that's part of, even before we got the number 2 pick, that was part of the piece that we all felt. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought something was wrong. You was tickling him. Sorry. my son's on a ventilator and his alarm was going off because he unplugged his thing and my wife was plugging him up. I thought that she was having difficulty, but she was tickling him. So sorry about that.
You're good.
All right. Back to what I was saying. But yeah, no, we was really happy for the draft. That's why I feel like that we was more comfortable going into this year than we was last year, even before we got the number 2 pick. And something that we've said as a podcast is, you know, the Sixers that trust the process, we have trust the Presti. So that's kind of the mantra we're trying to carry into going into the year. But, you know, one more thing on last year's draft. I mean, do you feel the same? Do you feel like, obviously, like, revisionist history, like, you know, it would have been nice to get Herb Jones there in the second round. It, you know, it could have been nice to, I still would have liked to get Trey Murphy instead of trading pick 16 away. But, you know, I mean, how do you feel about, I guess, your grade for last year's draft?
Yeah, the pick 16 trade is the only thing I really didn't like. I really thought they had a great, great opportunity for Alperen Şengün there. Mm-hmm. Also, the international presence they had. I'm huge on Alperen Şengün. I think he's going to be a really good center. I think he's got Vucevic level upside. So I would knock him for that. But also at the same time, they hit on all 4 picks. Like that's ridiculously hard. Even in it's a weird season, whatever. Aaron Wiggins probably doesn't get the same run under most teams in most situations, but like he got it and he showed he can be a 3-and-D guy. It was something I talked with Brian when I locked on Thunder was, you know, 3-and-D is the easiest position to scale, like role to scale up from two-way to actual like guaranteed roster spot. That is the easiest role. So all you have to do is hit your shots and stay in front of your man. You have 2 things to do on the court. And he did well. Jeremiah Robinson Earl looks like a veteran. I mean, well, that preseason game when Oklahoma City got absolutely blown out, he was the only one that was a positive. Like, yeah. Weird things like that. It doesn't actually matter, but it does matter in a way. Like, these guys are going to be good. And Trey Mann, I love. I think his athleticism popped a little bit in game. Mm-hmm. Even when they played the Mavs, it was funny because that big dunk he had, I don't remember, it might have been against Dallas, but that big dunk he had early in the season, it really just sent a different reputation for Mann. I knew him as a shot creating step back guy last year, and then the broadcasters were like, oh yeah, the high flying Trey Mann, like that's what he's known for. And I was like, whoa, what? So it's growth. Everybody has exceeded or met my expectations, and obviously I don't even need to say enough about Giddey. If he was healthy, first team all rookie.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because there's a lot of Thunder fans that were upset about it. Understandably to agree, but also understandably why he missed. But yeah, Trey Mann, I mean, I remember, you know, he really struggled with his shot going into the summer league, and even coming into the season, looked like he was really struggling to not even create space, because he was still creating like a ridiculous amount of space. His shot just wasn't falling. He was trying to get, I guess, accustomed to the different distance between college and NBA distance. But yeah, man, I remember that. I think it was the dunk over Wayne Ellington against the Lakers, and that was like the first, like, oh shoot, okay, Trey Mann's got bunnies like that. Interesting. So yeah, he's a very fun player. A lot of Thunder fans feel very highly on him, and a lot of draft guys feel very highly for him too. So glad to hear your thoughts on that. So before we get into this year's draft, I just want to ask you, you know, you're kind of on two different sides of the spectrum. You got a Western Conference Finals team as one fandom, and then you got a, you know, partner in crime on the rebuilding team. So like, how do you feel about Presti's plan? Do you feel like it's going to come to fruition like we're hoping it is, or do you think that he should look to cash in some of those picks sooner or later?
Well, I mean, I think he's a modern day successful process Sixers. In this way, I think he's a lot better at finding the bottom end talent that Hinkie wasn't. You look at his, it's like the Sixers, I mean, one of the guys that always jumps out, like there are a few, what's his name? Arnett Moultrie, Hollis Thompson, guys that just had no business being in the league. Like those were
Isaiah
guys. And you look at the Thunder and it's like, okay, sure. There's like Théo Maledon who is not good, but like, you also find these Aaron Wiggins. You find even Jalen Horde is better than Hollis Thompson ever was. He's a lot better at finding this deep cut talent. So for me, it's like, that's what's going to make him stand out. And on top of that, he's good at trading. You know, I wouldn't want to trade with him. And I think he eventually does cash in those chips though. I think that's something he'll do. And I think it's something that Oklahoma City will thrive under. So they have a good combination of young talent plus the ability to get proven talent that'll help them win. So I'm pretty confident.
All right, that's what I like to hear.
Incurring debt is one of the staples of adulthood. Believe me, I know. You know, from the start of, you know, going to college, moving out of your house, starting your own family, all that leads to incurring debt. And paying down debt can be very stressful. You know, because basically everything has to go right. You have to find other forms of income, other flows of income to try to go ahead and bring that down. And it's very difficult to do. You know, you sometimes start to juggle multiple credit cards, multiple payment dates, and it can be very arduous. But if you're tired of juggling due dates, consolidating with a personal loan could be your answer. That way you'll have just one due date a month, and Credit Karma can help you find the best option for you. Credit Karma uses credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you, so you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. Credit Karma will even show you your chances of approval, so you can choose between loan offers that you're more likely to get approved for and apply with more confidence. Comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free. It won't affect your credit scores, and you could save money in the process. Are you ready to apply? Head over to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Again, that's creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers. Credit Karma. Apply with more confidence today.
Well, hey, man, going into the draft, you know, talking about confidence, you know, before we get into, you know, because obviously you picked before us, so I want to hear about, like, what's your opinion on who the Magic's going to pick, because everybody's got a different opinion. Before we get into that, I just want to kind of ask blanket statement, like, who is your top five on the big board? Like, before I was asking top eight because that was the furthest we could fall, but, you know, now instead of it just being like, who's your top two, I just want to ask, who's your top five?
Yeah, so at the top, I have Jabari Smith as my number one. I just love the way his game scales up. I have Chet Holmgren at number two, superstar upside. Just, I mean, he could be the real center. And, you know, you look at what he does in the centers that I think he's going to average at least 2 assists and 2 blocks per game in the NBA pretty early too. And the players to do that are all, it's in a very exclusive club. You don't do that without being in like an all-star at least once. So I'm very high on that. Then I have Paolo Banchero. Just love his scoring and ability to be a first option. Jaden Ivey fourth, just because I don't know how much I trust the shot. And then fifth, I have Benedict Mathurin from Arizona. He's a, I don't want to say 3-and-D wing. He's a two-way wing with really good, just ideal length, size, and athleticism.
Okay. See, this is what I love. Like, you know, like I tell everybody else, like, it'd be really boring if I just brought everybody on. They had the same top five. I like parity in the top five. I remember even last year, like before Book Knight kind of had his rise and people thought we was going to take him at six. You had him at five when he was still like late lottery. So talk about kind of before we get into like who the Magic and Thunder are going to take, talk about what you see in Mathurin, why you have him higher over guys like Shaedon Sharpe, Keegan Murray.
Yeah, I love Keegan Murray. I think he probably is the highest floor in the draft. So I'll probably regret putting him at seven, which isn't even low, but like, I just think he'll be all rookie first team pretty safely barring injuries. The issue with Sharpe is just like, I don't know. Like high school, I don't know how to scout high school in 1 year to the next level of competition being the NBA. So for me, that's just really hard to evaluate. And I know the high school talent, he is so legit, like that the talent translates, but to what extent? So that's my issue, is it's almost just an inexperience thing for me, not being it. This is my first year of really scouting high school basketball. So I don't know. I could be wrong. He could be number one. He could also be like number 30. So we don't really know. It's hard to say with these guys who, I mean, yeah, every top 100 player looks like Wilt Chamberlain out there, level dominant. So it's hard to say that. But with Mathurin, it's more about him than the other guys, especially over Murray, since I had a more sample size. But I just think his prototype is really valuable. You look at his three-point shooting's legit. Yeah, it's going to translate. He's going to be at worst an above-average three-point shooter. His defense is really strong. Great athlete, crashes the boards. And I think his passing is something that, especially in a team like Oklahoma City, they could develop him really well. And I don't want to say it, but like the mold of that is a star. Like, I don't want to give a specific player, but I mean, you look at wings that can pass, shoot, defend, that's a star.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, I really like Mathurin as well. I have outside hope that he would fall to 12, and you know, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, but the reason I like him a lot is like just watching in his games on both ends of the floor. Dude's a dog. Like, he is such a tough competitor, and the aspect of his game that I really appreciate, like all the things you said, obviously, absolutely, like he's a great rebounder for his size as well. But the thing that I love is he's just a great cutter and a great slasher. And I think playing with guys like Shea and playing with guys like Giddy, and I mean, you know, even to like a smaller extent, like Poku and JRE, like we've got a lot of guys that can pass the ball. I think he could really thrive in that situation. Similar to what we've seen Aaron Wiggins, and I've kind of, you know, said that he could take Wiggins' role, but, you know, obviously a bigger role because, you know, Wiggins played a smaller role, but, you know, similar like play style, I guess. But all right, man, enough about the low. Like, we're getting to the top of the draft. Like, this is what the people have come for. This is, like, as soon as the lottery shook out, I was like, wow, this is perfect. We're having Mavs draft on the pod in, like, 2 days. So I want to hear, man, you know, you have Jabari number one at your board. Is that who you feel like the Magic's going to draft? Let me frame it like this. Who do you think the Magic will draft, and who do you want the Magic to draft?
Both answers might be Chet. I think he has the least overlap of any player right now on the roster. I'm pretty confident it's him that they will take, because this front office loves length and defense and shooting. And, you know, this is the front office that took Mo Bamba. And really, the way I look at Chet, is think of him this way. Imagine if Mo Bamba actually was good, because he's a bust in the nicest way. And it's not all about him, but just, I mean, you look at the players picked in that top 10. He has a very strong case of being the worst player. Marvin Bagley's better. And when you're in that discussion, you're probably a bust. And I mean that with, like, I can't say all the respect, because I realize how disrespectful it is, but you look at a player who can pass and shoot and defend better than Mo Bamba with his frame, and not entire frame, but just that like build. I think the Magic are going to fall in love with him. I personally would still probably take Chet, but I would give a very hard look at Jabari before Powell.
Yeah, well, hey, that's interesting you said that, because, you know, like we did like a 2.5-hour like live lottery reaction on Spaces. We had a bunch of Thunder fans chiming in, and we was trying to figure out who we thought would be there at two. And I was very consistent on saying Chet. I've heard a lot of people say Paolo, just because, like, the Magic, I guess they lack, like, a number one option, and Paolo would fit the mold there. I've heard a lot of people say Jabari. Draft deeper, Nathan Grubel, he's mentioned the fact that the proximity of Orlando and Auburn, like Orlando Magic's like scouts could like go and see Jabari like multiple times. Like they're going to have a good feel of like, you know, what he could provide or what he could contribute to a team. And so like, I've heard the case back forth, but I'm with you, man. I think it's Chet, you know, for all the reasons you said with the length and, you know, just like, you know, like, I guess shadow reasons, like, you know, his connection with Jalen Suggs, you know, playing together in the AAU team, Suggs being a huge influence on him going to Gonzaga. Obviously they're not going to just like listen to whoever Jalen Suggs says to pick for the number one pick in a draft, but I do think that it helps. It contributes. And I think it helps you guys too, because, you know, two of your best players, you know, probably two of your best three players, excluding Franz, instantly have a connection, and, you know, that bodes well for you guys going into the season. All right. Well, hey, so you say you got Chet number one going to the Magic. So gets to the Thunder, Jabari's on the board, Paolo's on the board. Same question. Who do you think that Presti will take? I know that's hard. That's hard to answer because Presti's one of a kind. And who do you want him to take?
Yeah, this one's for sure the same answer. I think it's going to be Jabari Smith. I think the Thunder are going to take a very long-term approach at this. You have a chance to draft probably one of the very best role player, like not even role player. He's not a role player. I think he'll make an all-star game in his career. You look at he's a role player the same way Klay Thompson is. Like, Klay is one of the very best 3-and-D players of all time. And to an extent, Jabari Smith is a bigger Klay Thompson. Obviously, the shooting differences, I'm not going to even say he's the same breadth of this best or second best shooter of all time. But I think there's just a lot of similarities. The way he defends, doesn't do a lot in terms of dribbles, but when asked, maybe every once in a while he can create a little bit of his own. Elite shooter in the league. Great defender, and obviously when you're 6'10", it just gives you such a massive advantage. You look at Maxi Kleber, for example, is probably the tallest 3-and-D guy in the league, and he has been great in the playoffs and his value. He's underpaid at whatever he's making, like $10 million a year, $8 million, something like that, maybe 12. That's a max contract. When you get that as a rookie, you're going to be instantly better, and I think the long game with why I say Jabari Smith, next year's draft class is unbelievably stacked. He's made it no secret. He's tanking for Wembanyama. Every team really should. That's not going to be over 500. They should all go in on the tank race. Like, he's that special. And the consolation prizes for not winning Wemby are pretty strong. So I think he's going to do that. You get the elite role player, you get the superstar, and you already have some really strong pieces in place. It's a great setup without having to give up any assets to be at stardom for a team.
I like it, man. You know, I'm not going to lie and tell you that Jabari at number one, and I agree with you on that. Like, I agree, like, Jabari is, like, a seamless fit. Like, you know, just providing somebody that has the shooting that he has with a guy, you know, with a team with Giddy and Shea, who, you know, rely on, you know, having some perimeter gravity, who have, like, the worst three-point shooting team in the league. Like, I've said consistently, Shea's done more with less than almost anybody in the league the past couple of years with as limited shooting as he's had. So I like Jabari. And it's funny you mentioned Klay. My co-host, Alex, he's even said that he pictures Jabari's role, at least his first couple of years, kind of being like a Klay, like, you know, running him through screens, off pin downs, spot ups, you know, because the lack of creation that he has. And, you know, playing again with Giddy and Shea, you might not have to create your shot as much with, you know, creators like that. So I do want to ask, you know, I mentioned I have Paolo number one on my board. It's a very fluid board. Like, it's changed a lot over the past few months. But if I was to ask you to make the case for Paolo at two, what would you say?
Yeah, you're looking at a number one score. His ability to just create his own shot, get to a spot, and shoot over a defender at his size, he's 6'10". That's really unique. You might think with saying that I described like a former superstar for Oklahoma City that wore number 35. You know, when you look at something like that, it's really special, and it's hard not to see the intrigue. Like, yeah, he has some defensive shortcomings. He really turns on and off his motor, which can be an alarm. But and also another one is that his passing, he makes some advanced passes, but it's his fundamentals as a passer. He can't make a post-entry pass. His accuracy is way off. You look at some of the fundamentals, it scares me off a little bit. If you're willing to overlook it, you know, it's not that bad. It may hurt you in the playoffs more than the regular season, but he can move his feet well. He has all the tools to be a decent defender at the least, hold his own kind of, I mean, in that way, like the same way we, this is unfair and I'm not comparing him, but like Kevin Durant's a great defender, I think, especially given the scoring load he has. He's a great defender, and it just seems like a lot of the play style and the overall style for both just overlaps. You look at a 6'10 shot creator that can hold his own on defense and sometimes create for others. That's the star mold.
All right. I like it, man. Yeah. I'm really intrigued by his passing because he kind of took the lead playmaker role going down the stretch for Duke in the postseason because they lacked a guy like that. Like their guards were, you know, bucket getters, you know, not really guys that, you know, create more for their teammates. So I'm intrigued by that. I'd like to see that unlocks more. I think that, you know, having multiple guys that can create for himself and his teammates would be good to have on a team. But yeah, everything you said, like all those concerns, they're valid 100%. I do want to ask you this. So, you know, like we mentioned, Presti's a wild card. He's one of a kind. If there was going to be somebody that would go out of the consensus top three at pick two, it would be him. If Presti was to go out of consensus top three, who do you see fitting OKC the best?
Man, you know, I thought about Jaden Ivey for a bit because he is really talented. Mm-hmm. But I actually think it might be Jalen Duren. You look at a guy who was top three in what was supposed to be this upcoming recruiting class. He shouldn't even reclassified into this class. And I think he might sneak up into the top five. It really wouldn't shock me. I don't think he's going to do it at two or anything like that. But his ability to protect the rim, move in space, and finish at the rim is really special. And if you believe the jump shot comes along, personally, I don't. If you believe the jump shot comes along, you've got a really talented player. And honestly, a lot of people compared his play style to Dwight Howard, and I kind of see it. I don't think he's a one-to-one, but that play style is.
Okay. I like it. Spicy, man. So, you know, you mentioned you don't think that we should take him at two. Would you entertain – do you think the Thunder should entertain trading back at two? Like, obviously, like, they're going to listen to offers, but, like, do you think that's something they should legitimately entertain, or do you think, like – you know, there's a big three in this draft. You have one of the big three. Don't overthink this.
Yeah, probably don't overthink it. But if you get a Godfather offer, somebody like, I don't know, Washington is desperate enough where they're like, hey, we need Jabari Smith and we'll do anything. Like, we'll give you whoever you want. Like, I mean, hell, even if they got Dan Gafford and trying to think of who else is on there. I can't really think of their roster. I should have thought of this right before, but a package around Dan Gafford 10 and a future pick or something. It might be worth it. You get a center, you upgrade there, and you also really – the drop-off isn't, like, insane. It's a very, like – what's the word? Is it not linear, I guess, but it's a very gradual drop-off.
Gradual, yeah.
Maybe it is linear, but, yeah, like, regardless, it's a draft where it's, like, the drop-offs from each range that it generally drops off at over year, it doesn't do this year.
I got you. Yeah, one concept that another one of my co-hosts, Matty Moles, has kind of brought up is like trading back to like four with the Kings or five with the Pistons and like, you know, maybe getting a Kings like unprotected pick next year or having the Pistons remove their protections on their next year's pick or, you know, something like that. And like, I don't even know if that's something that they would entertain because like you said, Wembanyama is like the big price everybody's vying for. So I kind of lean with you, like they should probably not overthink it and just hang out with two. But hey, if that's on the table, you at least got to consider it because I do think that just the mystery box of Shaedon Sharpe, I think, really intrigues a lot of teams. And I could see, you know, Presti, a guy that said famously, like, we don't have a consensus draft board. I could see him, you know, taking a swing on somebody like that. All right, moving down to the pick 12, the Clippers pick that didn't jump but didn't fall, thankfully. Who's some prospects around that range that you like?
Yeah, let me first clarify. When I said trade with the Wizards, I thought of this right after. If they take that 10th pick and they also have 12, move back up, use those two picks or even the 30th pick too, and move up into like the top seven. So just
yeah.
Clarify. I wouldn't just settle for 10 and 12. That'd be a horrible disaster of a tank. But
okay. That's fair.
I did not clarify that whatsoever. I don't want to be put on the stake. But some other guys that are in that range, you look at Malachi Branham, somebody who's climbing I don't know if they'd really take a guard, but I think he is one of the better ones at fitting with other guards. Mm-hmm. AJ Griffin, if his medicals keep him from sliding up, or excuse me, keep him from rising up. He was almost 50% shooter for most of the year until the tournament. Really just lights out. He's raw because he was injured for a couple of years. Should be able to grow into a good defender and overall like good slasher too off the attack. Maybe even Keegan Murray. If I doubt he's there at 12, actually, so disregard that.
Yeah.
Some a couple other names though. You look at Johnny Davis from Wisconsin, was a one-man show there. And then Usman Jang. I really think, you know, Sam Presti's connects to the international game. Usman is a guy who's 6'9 or so. I think he actually measured. So let me double check that. He did not measure. So never mind. We'll go with 6'9. He's a shot creator to an extent, can hit off of like one or two dribbles. Good shot. Great defender. But it was a tale of two halves for him when you look up the stats. Like his second half of the season was much better.
Yeah, I think I listened to Rafael Barlow's pod today, Locked On Big Board, and he mentioned that he spoke to Usman Jang and said that he told him that he's 6'10". You know, again, that's word of mouth. It's not official measurements, but if that's the case, it does help out. Yeah, Jang's a guy that I've been really intrigued with. I know that he had a rough start to his year in NBL, and that kind of turned a lot of guys off to him. But just his combination of skill, like it's like tailor-made for what Presti's looking at. Like these past couple of years, a guy that can dribble, pass, shoot, and even combining, you know, his old philosophy of like, you know, lengthy guys that are athletic and defend, you know, it kind of meshes the best of both worlds. And I've been kind of firm in saying that I feel like if you go kind of safe, like a surefire guy, like a Jabari, like a Paulo, like a Chet at the top of the draft, you can kind of afford to take a swing, you know, in the 12 range. So I would love, you know, see Jang. You know, you mentioned Johnny Davis. You mentioned Malachi Branham. Talk about Malachi Branham because, you know, we've had a lot of Johnny Davis apologists on the pod, even Dyson Daniels. Let's hear what you guys said about Malachi Branham and kind of how you project his fit with guys like Shea and Giddey.
Yeah, he's a little bit raw. For the first 2 months of the season, he averaged 6 points a game. After that, it was over 20. So he's really another guy tail of two halves, and you look at the upside with him with a decent floor, really recovers well from pick and rolls, and for guards his age, that's really rare to say. Good jump shot. I like his ability to shoot it all to mid-range and three-pointer and to be a three-level scorer as a finisher too. He's confident in slashing. So I like his ability just to be a complete two-way guard.
Okay, I like it. See, I've seen all the things about offense, like his offensive explosion there at the end of the year. But that was the first time I've heard somebody really like break down his potential defensively. And that intrigues me because kind of bleeding into the next question here. Do you think that OKC should try to trade up from 12, or do you trust that there's going to be a good enough prospect to fall at 12 that we could stay put without moving an asset?
Well, I don't think Oklahoma City can really take three guys in the first 34. I think they're going to make a trade inevitably.
Yeah.
Personally, I would move either 12 and 30 or 12 and 34, move up a couple spots. I mean, if you got a chance at like Keegan Murray or something, I mean, that's a game changer. Again, if they take Jabari Smith at two, I actually don't even know how they tank with that roster. It's going to be a lot harder. To do that with the roster that I'm building out through this draft.
Just with the spacing, man.
Yeah. It would be really good. And like, you know, if you want to have some injuries at the end of the season to roll into that tank race, more power to you because rookies don't help with winning. That's something most rookies, I should say. There are very few that end up positive. It's about 8 or 9 a year. And maybe one of them will be, but I mean, that would be an incredible haul. Just those two alone. I don't think you need to take anybody else after that.
Yeah. No, I'd be ecstatic with Keegan Murray falling, you know, down to that range, you know, maybe trade up just a little bit to get him. You know, he's been a guy I've been consistent. Like, I like him. I just don't want him to be the big prize for all of our pain and suffering this year. And, you know, now that we have the number two pick, like, yeah, if we can move up a little bit to get him, I'm all for it. So I'm right there with you. I want to ask you this. I kind of brought this up in our spaces. I haven't got to ask anybody else about this. So, the Hornets have picked 13 and 15, and obviously we're picked 12. I feel like the Hornets are looking for a big man. I think they would love like a Jalen Duren, Mark Williams type of guy. Say like Mark Williams was to get to 12 and OKC, like, you know, there's a lot of people that say there's a big drop off after Deron Williams on the big men. Say OKC was to say, you know, we're going to take Mark Williams. If we offered you 12 and 30, we could have 13 and 15. Do you think that's something they go for? Do you think that it's just too much value for them?
I would do it for Oklahoma City. I'm trying to think if Charlotte would do it. And I think Charlotte would probably rather have 13 and 15.
But, yeah.
It would be an interesting one. I think that there's room to work with from that package.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just there's a bunch of guys that I want this draft. Like, the more I dive into it, the more I fall in love. Like, guys like Jalen Williams, who Rafael Barlow today said that he's working his way up in the lottery buzz, and that just bums me out because he was a guy I really wanted at pick 30 or, like, trading to the 20s. So, yeah, I guess this is just me just trying to manufacture ways to get more guys in those range. All right, let's see here. So, we have mentioned, you know, we also have picked 30 and 34. Let's just say, hypothetically, Presti was to keep, like, to keep all these picks, like he was actually going to make selections here. Is there somebody in that range that you feel like would either fit well or would be worth taking a shot on?
This is on pick 30, correct?
30 or 34, you know, just, yeah, they're kind of same range.
Man, you know, it's hard to say with the combine. It feels like I'm starting to see the changes, because a week ago I would have said Turquavion Smith, but I think he's played himself out of that range.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who, God, it's hard. I think there's guys that might surprise people and fall, like Ty Washington. I could see something like that. I don't think he'd fall. I don't think Oklahoma City's the team to take him, but
yeah,
maybe Wendell Moore from Duke. He's mm-hmm. really almost flown under the radar in a way, like just every way, even as a freshman to now. I mean, he's 6'5 and a half with a 7 foot and a half wingspan, so plus seven. It's pretty ridiculous. He can defend, he can pass. Kind of drive, not really though, and then he can really shoot with the lights out, and he's been more confident this year. He needs to still get a little bit more confident, be a killer as a three, but I would absolutely love to see him. And I'll throw out two names that I think are actually realistic, because obviously Wendell Moore, but you look at Jalen Williams from Arkansas. If he makes it that far, I know he's kind of in the draft, kind of, because he could come back and be on one of the most stacked teams ever at Arkansas of young talent. And I think he should stay in the draft as much as he could win a title. That dude's a very all-around big man. He can do everything. 6'10", 6'11", and can do just about everything. And I'm trying to see if his wingspan or anything like that checks out, because he got measured. But, yeah, he's a pretty good 6'10", with 7'1", wingspan, and has a lot of guard skills.
I gotcha. Yeah, I want to ask you, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about the big guys here in a little bit, but one of the big winners kind of at the combine, Christian Coloco, I saw that he shot very well from the three-point star drill, and that kind of shocked me, because everything I've seen from Coloco is he's a guy that gets it done around the rim. His guy's going to protect the rim. Do you feel like he's going to kind of shoot up on the draft boards a little bit, or do you feel like, you know, it's just kind of a workout atmosphere?
Yeah, I actually do think he might that he might really stand out, because with him, he has been hidden in the last 2 years under Sean Miller. You get a coaching change and suddenly, boom, he broke out. You know, he took a – I have a video of it if you search it. He took a jump shot against Washington State, and it actually looked pretty clean. So I think it's real. I'm willing to bet that jump shot is real. How real the three-point shot right now is, or early in his career, hard to say, but a mid-range is very realistic.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, see, a lot of Thunder fans have just been really obsessed with the quote-unquote lob threat for Gideon Shea, and understandably so. Like, it would be a lot of fun. Like, I think it's important to have vertical spacing, but, like, you know, like I mentioned earlier with just, you know, Shea's tendency driving to the rim and, like, how much space could do for him, I really want a big that can – at least theoretically stretch the floor. Like, you know, as a big man, I'm not asking you to be Carl Anthony Towns and shoot 40% from three, but, you know, 33, 34% from three, like, you know, obviously not off the bat, but, like, I just want spacing all over the floor for Shea. I want him to have, you know, as clear of a lane as he can to get to the rim. So, Coloco is kind of a guy that I've been intrigued with. Kamagate was kind of like my choice of the big man after, like, the Deron Mark Williams tier, but if Coloco can shoot like this and projects to be like a consistent shooter like this, I think I'm going to have him higher up on that.
Yeah, and it comes down to the jump shot, and because his perimeter quickness is really nice. Like, you'll get a modern big, you won't be frozen out of the playoffs.
I like it. Hey, I mean, you might be talking me into him. well, hey, you know, talking about, like I said, assume that we keep all four picks. This has been something we ask all our guests here. But for you, we get pick two instead of pick four. So assume we keep pick two, pick 12, 30, and 34. What are one or two fun player combinations you'd like to see on OKC?
Man, I would say it's a cheat code to use number two, because I think Jabari Smith, if anybody, is really unfair. I would say at 30 that they get Ryan Rollins, and at 12 they get Usman Jang, because you get kind of the balance that both of them lack and are good at, because Ryan Rollins is somebody who I love. I don't even know if he'll make it to 30, but he's been my guy. Him and Rafael and I have been hyping him up all year, and I think he's just a beautiful shot maker. Doesn't play any defense. That's where Usman Jang comes in as a stalwart on defense next to him that can also create and finish a little bit and help Ryan Rollins as a playmaker grow. I really love that combination. You get two scorers. I know backcourt player may not seem like the best thing for Oklahoma City, but I really do think he can fit into all these three guard lineups and whatnot too. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I like it, man. You know, I kind of lean on the best player available over the fit thing, even as you get lower into the draft, because as encouraging as signs have been, and, you know, as encouraging this draft would be, we're not good enough to really care about fit right now. Like, we have a talent deficit, and, you know, we need to add talent. So if you think Ryan Rollins has a chance to, you know, get out there and outplay guys like Teo Maledon, Pete Krejci, or heck, even Trey Mann, like, absolutely draft him and, you know, let those guys, you know, prove themselves. So, yeah, and also Ryan Rollins, Corey Tolba of Draft Dak and No Ceilings, he actually said when he was on here that was a guy that he really likes too. He mentioned that he sees a lot of Devin Booker in his offense, which obviously he said, you know, he's not Devin Booker. Like, don't get it twisted, but, you know, he sees a lot of tendencies like that. So, yeah, that's a guy I've kind of started diving into, and I'm right there with you, man. Like, yeah, if we was to get Jabari, Usman Jang, and Ryan Rollins, I mean, back-to-back years, Presti, just like A+. So I'm excited, man. It's going to be a fun draft. Well, before we get into Twitter questions, we have a few Twitter questions, and we like to, you know, end our interviews with a game, just like go on a fun note. If I was to ask you to give a bold prediction for the Thunder draft, what would it be?
Man, I'm going to go with they package 34, 30, and 12. And they move into the top 7, 6, whatever that gets you. I could see them being kind of two and done, be in the top and then stop from there.
All right. I like it. I tell you, like, I've walked through the scenario in my head because, you know, we're going to do like a live pod during the draft and everything. Like we did last year, we recorded like 4.5 straight hours. Like it was a terrible decision in retrospect because we went all the way to pick 55, but it was a good time. So I've walked through, like, you know, we're expecting pick two, we're breaking down pick two, and all of a sudden you get the Woj bomb, the Thunder's traded up, and like everybody's just going crazy. So yeah, I like it, man. That's a lot of fun. But hey, like I said, I did ask for a couple of Twitter questions, and we got a few here. So I'm going to go – let's see here. So at Thunder Up Trey said, if there is one riser that would be the Josh Primo in this draft and shock everyone how high he goes, who would it be?
Well, the answer before the combine was a lot cooler. I'm going to give three candidates. Jean Montero from Overtime Elite.
Yeah.
Blake Wesley from Notre Dame, and just Jalen Williams doesn't count because, I mean, what we just talked about, how he's probably already done that. I mean, I'm trying to think of who else it could be. I mean, really, the only one that comes to mind, Terquavion Smith, might actually be it. But at that point, how much? The other two are much more surprising, I think. When you look at Jean Montero and Blake Wesley, they're not talked about very much on draft sites because they didn't go to places that are easily accessible for a lot of people compared to the Duke, North Carolina, whatever school you want to talk about. They're a little bit under the radar.
Man, just intentionally excluded Kentucky. I see how it is. It's all good. now, I want to ask John Yama Ontario, he played today in the combine, right? I didn't get to see how he did.
I didn't either, but I know I got to see him actually last week before the combine.
Oh, nice.
Over in Dallas, and I was just blown away. I thought of him as a pure scorer before that. The dude is completely pass first. It's a big misconception. The system he played in was a pickup game where they're like, all right, do whatever you want. And I think he's going to benefit from getting stronger. He's not very long, very skinny, but he knows how to play to his strength, quite literally, like his physical strength. He knows how to use it. And I think that's going to do a lot for him. He's a raw project, but somebody's going to take a chance and have him develop a patient system and see the results.
All right. I like it. Yeah, I kind of want to circle back on this because, you know, like I said, I really like Jalen Williams, and you did bring him up again, so he just hopped up in my mind. A lot of the reason that he's kind of shot up draft boards at the combine is because he's tested so well, like his standing vertical, his running vertical, his wingspan, his height. His wingspan is just ridiculous. 6'6" and like 7'2" wingspan. It's crazy. And, you know, obviously his play in the combine. You know, like I said, Rafael thinks that he's going to be a lottery guy. Do you think that's a guy that Presti should target at 12, or do you think it's a little too rich for your blood?
Man, I just don't see a big enough gap between most of these guys. I don't have an issue at 12.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I don't know, man. Like I said it today, you know, kind of joking, like F it, just take him at 12. But, you know, if there's a GM that was like, you know, identify him as your guy and just like, I'm just going to take him at 12, it's Presti. So I would be a little shocked, but I'd be okay with it. So, all right, moving on. We'll stop talking about Jalen Williams. Sorry, guys. So at Esson DVL, I guess this is a question like for you specifically. Is it better to have, or for you, is it better to have the number one pick in the draft, or would you rather have 2 and 12?
This is a year we talked about this actually on Locked On, on our live show. It might be better to have 2 and 12. I don't know if I'd want to, like Rafael was saying, I don't know if I want to be the team that is locked in on, they have to start the path on the top three, because nobody knows how these top three are really supposed to be ranked. Yeah. Everybody's just kind of spitballing. There's no like clear, oh, you haven't seen this element. It's obvious is what separates them. There is none of that. So I would probably say 2, and having to make a 50-50 choice is a lot better than a 33-33-33 choice.
All right. I like it. Gassing us up a little bit before we close it out. I appreciate that. So at Shea_Step, he asked a couple questions that we already covered, but I did want to acknowledge him and thank him for asking those questions. So, man, we're going to close it out, playing a couple games. All I gave you was rapid fire, kind of told you what the games would be, but not telling you the context. So we'll go ahead and get started, man. So overrated, underrated. If I was asked, you give me a prospect that you think is overrated and underrated. And if you don't want to say overrated because you don't want to be critical, just say somebody that you have higher than consensus and lower than consensus.
All right, let's do it.
No, I mean, yeah, just like, just pick one of these. Sorry.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. You're wanting me to, okay, I apologize. I thought you were going to give a name. I'm so sorry. Yes, overrated. This feels like a cheap shot. Patrick Baldwin. He's been hyped up for results that are 2 years in the past now. And I don't know. He didn't perform at the FIBA USA. He didn't perform at a very weak conference and easy games. How am I supposed to trust that he's going to perform in the NBA? How many can I do?
You can do as many as you want, man.
Well, the next one is the easiest target of them all. This is the easiest like punch down I've ever done. Peyton Watson. I don't know how on earth that guy is in the NBA combine. Shout out to his agent for the good work he's putting in. But his whole thing was like, oh, he's raw. That's why he was so bad. UCLA is a bad fit, all this stuff. And like, you'll see his length is really going to separate him. He's 6'8 with a 7-foot wingspan. That's really not that special.
Yeah.
And he can't shoot. I don't buy him at all. I don't have him in my top 100 personally.
All right. And I respect it.
And then moving to the underrated, I'll do two. For me, pretty easy. Ryan Rollins. I have him at 16 right now. I don't think the consensus really even has him first round. but I'm pretty confident once the combine's done, he'll be there. Another one who, I mean, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper than just first round guys. Someone who I feel is really, really underrated, hasn't gotten any attention. And I know there's been some agency stuff where they just kind of forgot about him for the draft, is this kid from Europe. He's auto eligible. His name's Giordano Bordolani. And trust me, I could not have made that any more Americanized of a name, but he's 6'4", one of the best shooters on the planet that is not in the NBA. He shot, and actually he's pretty efficient too, shot 46% from the field in Italy, which is a pretty good league this year, had 13 points a game. And that was on 44% from three and 87% from the line. If you search Bortolani, as Americanized as that sounds, you should be able to spell it Bortolani. If you search him, Mavs draft, you'll see these videos. His threes are just insane. His shooting touch is nuts. He can shoot over anybody, and his quickness of getting it off. I don't want to say it, but he looks like one of the best shooters not in the NBA. Like, he is a massive sleeper.
Dang. Okay. Hey, I got to say, that's a name I haven't heard yet. So, like, you've done your job on the underrated. I'm excited to kind of dig in on him. That sounds like a guy that Presti might just, you know, sneak his way into the back of the second round and be like, hey, let me take that guy. Borgiani, is that what you said his name was?
Giordano Bortolani.
Bortolani. Gosh, I was close. My bad. It's a tough one. All right. We kind of already asked this, but I'll ask you for the dichotomy of it. So biggest riser and biggest faller in this draft.
Yeah, biggest riser is probably going to be Jalen Williams from Santa Clara. I mean, that's the cop out. The biggest faller, that was one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Patrick Baldwin, not close. I took two cheap shots on my overrated, but the biggest, far and away, the biggest faller is him. Patrick Baldwin can't shoot, but he's a shooter. Athleticism was, somebody said it was like Dakari Johnson. That's a flag.
Yeah, I saw he had like one of the four lowest vertical, like combined verticals in like the history of the combine. And that's just, that's not good. And I was willing to take a shot on Patrick Baldwin Jr., but after like everything that's happened at the combine, like, nah, I'm good off that. So, all right, moving into superlatives. You kind of mentioned this a second ago. I'm going to see if it's your same answer. Best shooter in the draft.
So, I mean, it's really Jabari Smith, but like, because in terms of realisticness to actually make the league and stick in the league, it's Jabari Smith. If you're looking at just overall pure shooter, it's Bordolani. It's actually probably not close either. I mean, you look at what he's doing in a pro league, that level of efficiency. I'm telling you, search his name if you're, you know, if you're able to spell it out at this point, search his name on Twitter. I'll probably be some of the videos. It's absurd. The movement threes, the off the screen, the self-created, he has really nice handles and he's a really good passer. So I know I diverted away from the best shooter, but I mean, like, his shooting ability is nuts and he knows how to use his gravity.
That's awesome, man. I'm really excited. Like, you know, I've done like 8 draft pods, you know, since the end of the season, and that's a name I haven't heard. So I'm excited to dive in. I feel like a kid in a candy store. So best athlete in this draft.
The best athlete in this draft, man, it might – Jalen Duren's up there. He's really up there. Jaden Ivey is a tough one to doubt. I would probably go – Jaden Ivey has a really strong kid. I hate using, like, a top guy for this, but I think it's Jaden Ivey. That's probably going to be my answer.
If it's right, it's right, man. all right, moving into the best defender. This could be perimeter, interior, overall, however you want to describe it.
In terms of tools, I'm not sure there's one better than Ismael Kamikaze, just the quickness and everything and the rim protection, the recovery ability. It's pretty nuts. Jeremy Sohan's up there. Kendall Brown's probably up there. Usman Jang is somebody who really might be one of the best defenders. I'm trying to think of a guard that could really sneak up into this conversation. Trevor Keels is definitely one. That's probably the guard answer I would go with. So just kind of got one of every position.
I gotcha. So do you have Keels like over guys like Dyson Daniels, Johnny Davis, or?
No, not that high. I have Keels. I've cooled off on him. I was higher. I moved him into a second round grade just because the offense, it's a little bit shaky right now. Obviously he's young, but just shaky offense is a little bit worrisome for a guard.
Right, my bad. I explained that bad. I meant as a defender. That was my fault. Oh, I didn't mean you attribute skills that high.
So sorry. Yes. No, that's on me. Yeah, he is one of the – I mean, he's up in that range. I think he's a better defender than Johnny Davis.
Okay. I like it. Deepest bag in the draft.
Oh, Ryan Rollins. Next. All right. I'm so confident in that. His ability just to it's nuts. The self-creation moves he has. He has the behind-the-back step-backs in his bag already. It's one of the most polished jumpers in the game.
Okay, I'm with it. Highest floor in the draft, you said Keegan Murray, or are you sticking with that? Okay,
yeah, it's okay. Keegan or Jabari.
Okay. And best passer in the draft?
Best passer in the draft. That is tough. Man, give me a second to think on that. I should have had an answer prepared, but –
no, you're good.
You know, I'm gonna go with a deep cut guy, Andrew Nembhard. He was one of the best passers in the country from Gonzaga. There's a really good chance he gets drafted in the end of the second round. I would go with him. And also, actually, I'm looking through my board, and there's somebody else I want to add as a best bag, Jamari Bouye from San Francisco. That dude has a bag, so he's an honorary mention.
Yeah, he played in the tournament, right?
Played Murray State.
Yeah. I remember Swiss Cultures did a video on him. I that name stuck out, and it was because of his bag. So, yeah, right there with you. All right, last one, man. Start, bench, cut. This is a prevalent conversation in all of basketball. We're taking it to the draft Twitter. So, or not draft Twitter, draft conversation. I don't know what I said Twitter. All right, anyways, start, bench, cut. Let's start with shooters here. And I had Patrick Bowman Jr. in there, but he's out. I'm going to take him out of that. Yeah, he's done, so. I'm going to say Christian Brown, however you say it, yep, Gabriel Pachita, and your guy, what's his name? Bordolani.
This is easy. The start. I mean, the chances of getting to the NBA again, the stuff with Bordolani, it's going to be a little bit tougher because, some internal issues with, just the international pool.
Gotcha.
So I would say start Prashida just because of that advantage. But in terms of skill, I would say Bordolani start, bench Prashida, and it's not even close. I cut Christian Brown. I'm completely out on him.
Oh, really? Why don't you like Christian Brown?
He can't do a straight line left-handed drive, and in his time at Kansas, he hasn't done a normal – I know I got burned by this once. I said I learned, but he hasn't done a normal pull-up jump shot even when there's been space to do it. I really think he's having some of his flaws hidden at Kansas.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, Christian Brown's been a guy that I've kind of like grown to like just because of his shooting and his, I mean, he tested great athletically and then like his tenacity as well. But all right, I'm gonna have to look into that. Maybe I've just been, you know, taking people's word for it. Prashida's a guy that I love. Like, I would love to get like at 30 or 34 as like even like a drafting stash, even if you don't want to bring him over, you know, for his shooting and his athleticism as well. So, all right, I'm with it. Moving into, like, this was kind of my, like, veteran wing guys. So, I got Johnny Davis, Keegan Murray, and Ochai Agbaji.
Start Keegan. Bench Agbaji, cut Johnny.
Okay.
That's a little unpopular. I think Ochai, you know, I didn't even mention him in best shooters. I think he's one of the best shooters in the draft. Just that floor ability is nuts, and he's a great athlete.
All right, I like it. Are you lower on Johnny Davis than consensus?
Yeah, I've warmed up to him a little bit in the last few weeks, but mm-hmm. for the most part, I'm lower on him.
Okay, and like I said, you know, that's okay. Like, I'm not chastising. Like, I like parity and
boards.
Like, I like different opinions. So, all right, I'm with it. Let's see here. Bigger wings. I got Tari Eason, EJ Liddell, and Jeremy Sochan.
Start Eason, bench Sochan, cut Liddell. I don't know what. I have an issue with – that was tough because I like Eason and not the other two that much. But EJ Liddell, he has questionable lateral quickness, and I'm iffy on his passing and if his shooting translates. It's a lot of question marks for me.
I got you. Yeah, there's always one guy in the draft I just, like, irrationally hate, and this draft is Jeremy Sochan. So, that's my guy. I mean, it has nothing to do with his personality or how he looks. Like, I just
think – yeah, are you sure it's not the looks? Because – because he dyes his hair every game. Maybe that got on your nerves.
Does he do it every game?
He had like a, I forgot what it was. He had like a sick, I want to say it was like an afro or something. I don't remember exactly, but he had sick hair and then like just cut it all off, which really, it was harder to find him on the court because of that. Like, cause him and Kendall Brown really stood out with like the massive hair. And unfortunately the first game I saw and I was like, is Sohan not playing? Like, is this a misprint? So it really threw me off.
Yeah, no, man. Like, I don't know. I just kind of had it with defensive specialists. Like, I want somebody that could do stuff on the offensive side of the ball. I'm like, I know there's some theoretical stuff there offensively. I just don't know if I trust it. But going into the international pool, we got the aforementioned Usman Shang, Dyson Daniels, and the never mentioned Nikola Jovic. I always just throw him in here after never mentioning him the entire pod. So
I start Jovic, 6'11 shot creator that can score very well from the 3-point line. I bench Jang and I cut Dyson Daniels. It comes down. I think Dyson Daniels' IQ and defense are really good, but I just don't know how well the shooting adapts in the NBA.
Okay, talk a little bit about Nikola Jovic, because I think you're the first person that we've had on here that has had anything positive to say about him. So, like, wax poetic a little bit, because I need to be convinced.
Yeah, he has a lot of shortcomings. He's a mid finisher at the rim, not a very good athlete. Defense is horrible. He's physically immature. His body needs to get better. Need to see what the intel says. I don't know what his work ethic is like and whatnot. But the pros are just ridiculous. I mean, even if this one skill translates, I think he's a top 15 player. And that's, you have a handle at six, you measured at 6'11. He has a great handle. He's 18 years old, will be 18 past the draft. So you combine that handle, he has a bag, he has that ability to really just hit deep step backs, and his just, I trust the shooting and shot creation. That's pretty much it. And I can say all the moves he has, but I mean, it's really deep shot creation at his size and age is just really special to me.
Do you think he's what people thought Patrick Baldwin Jr. was?
Honestly, I could, yes. And in a decent, yeah, to some extent, yes.
Okay. All right. I like it. Two more, man. So this is our, I guess, late round bigs. So the aforementioned Christian Kouoka, aforementioned Ismail Kamagate, and Walker Kessler.
Okay. I start Kamagate. This is really tough, but I bench Kouoka. I love both of those two, and I'm all the way out on Walker Kessler. So I cut him. I don't think his shot blocking, he's one of the best shot blockers ever in college, but he's so slow. He can get away with recovering in college and he camps out of the paint and kind of hunts. I don't think he can do it in the NBA.
Yeah. He feels very heavy footed. Like, you know, say what you want about Rudy Gobert, like defensively, like he moves his feet pretty well around the rim anyways, not so much on the perimeter, but yeah, I'm with you there. All right. Last one, this is our athletic wings. I got Shaedon Sharpe, AJ Griffin, and your guy, Benedict Mathurin.
So it was Shaedon, Mathurin, who was the middle?
AJ Griffin.
I start Sharp because the upside. I bench Mathurin and I cut Griffin. That one hurt. That one really hurt because I like all three.
I'm glad I made at least one of those hard for you. So, yeah, AJ Griffin, do you feel like the athleticism thing is kind of being overblown, or do you feel like it's like a legitimate concern?
Yeah, he's coming off 2 years of injury. Let the man heal. I mean, he didn't look 100% even for the first couple months. So, yeah, I think the athleticism is fine.
All right. I like it, man. Well, hey, Richard, we've gone a few minutes over what I said I would have you for. So, thank you for your time. I thank you for graciously coming on the pod. Go ahead and plug anything that you want to plug to our listeners and I'll let you have the floor.
Yeah. Locked On NBA Big Board is our new hub. We moved from Locked On NBA Draft. I'm on every Tuesday, probably more going forward, but we do it every day. We're the only daily draft show out there. And then my Twitter at MavsDraft, any clips, scouting reports, all that I post all goes through there. So if you want to see just about every player covered, I'm trying to do that this year.
All right, man. I like it. And yeah, we'll definitely be following your work on there. I mean, you've opened my eyes to different players that I hadn't heard of or hadn't even thought of, like, you know, in a positive regard, you know, in regards to Jovic anyway. So I appreciate your insight. Appreciate you coming on, man. Had a great time. And guys, hope y'all have a great day. God bless. Hoop when you can. And as always, Thunder up.
Thank you for listening to the Top of Thunder podcast. Our podcast is available to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, and follow us on Twitter at OKC Topic Thunder. Thunder up!
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.